Good morning. It is time to get up with the sweetest words in the baseball language. Play ball. On the verge of huge news, we've got it right off the top. Then, one prominent football coach says all the things you didn't think could possibly happen are absolutely going to. You need to hear this, and it's just minutes away. And then, they drop the schedule tonight. When will these two legends meet up? And what will it mean when they do? You've got questions. We've got answers as we get up with you starting right now on a Thursday from Bristol. Mike Greenberg here. So delighted you've chosen to get up with us. And I can tell you right now, the big challenge for us is to squeeze everything into the 2 hours that we have. It is a very busy morning in the world of sports. And we will begin with Get Up and Go, where the National Football League has set protocols for the gradual reopening of team facilities and told all 32 clubs to have them in place by May 15th. The process would begin with select staff members and eventually expand to include the players. The league is also, of course, going to release the full 2020 schedule tonight. We'll talk about that in a moment. NBA Commissioner Adam Silver and the Players Association Executive Director Michelle Roberts will host a call for all the NBA players on Friday. That is the same day the league has permitted teams to reopen practice facilities for voluntary workouts. Meanwhile, they're starting to play sports across the globe. Germany's biggest soccer league now has an official game day on the calendar. Bundesliga will return next Saturday, May 16th, with no fans in the stadiums. The league is hoping to finish their season on time, which would mean June 30th. Meanwhile, here in the MLS, players from both Sporting KC and Orlando City FC returned to their team facilities yesterday for individual workouts. Players were shown wearing face masks and being tested upon entering the facilities. Then to our huge news this morning, our Jeff Passan reporting that Major League Baseball is finalizing plans for a return-to-play proposal that it expects to present to the Players Association within a week. Teams have begun to become encouraged to get their players to prepare for spring training as early as mid-June. Here's the man with all the news. Jeff Passan joins us this morning. Jeff, what is the latest on this timetable for baseball's return?
Well, Greeny, the optimistic timetable that teams have been telling their players about is spring training starting sometime around June 10th and games starting as early as June 1st or July 1st. Now, I want to reiterate, that is very optimistic. And teams are incentivized to tell their players, hey, we don't want you showing up to spring training 2.0 with a gut, with love handles, with any of the things that, you know, could happen in quarantine and that all of us are fighting every day. Get ready. And that that edict to get ready is more saying to them, hey, this could happen. But in reality, Greeny, it's going to come down to a few things. How quickly can they get an agreement with the players? How quickly can they get the backing of federal officials? And how quickly can health officials get on board with this as well as they try to sell this plan to the American public?
All right, so we started with the when. Now let's work our way to the how. What do we know about how they will come back when they can?
Well, the how is what's really up in the air at this point, but there has been momentum from teams pushing for playing games in home stadiums. Now, the reason for this is there are a couple of them. Number one, the convenience of being in home stadiums and keeping players with their families half the time like they normally do. You know, Major League Baseball, I think, rightly believes that players will be more on board with that plan as opposed to a quarantine plan. There's also the fact that regional sports networks that broadcast these games want them to have as Major League a feel as possible if there are not going to be fans in the stands, which there won't, and having that ambiance, whether it's of Fenway Park, of Yankee Stadium, of Dodger Stadium, of all 30 Major League stadiums, is of import to them.
All right, so that's Jeff Passan again with all the latest news here. You can read much more about it on ESPN.com. And listen, I'm going to take it as the optimistic sign that it is, because there's no reason not to, and root for the best. Jeff, well done. We'll check in with you a little later in the program today. Then to this college football news, where, of course, as we know, there are no set plans yet for how or when to begin their 2020 season in light of the pandemic. But Penn State head coach James Franklin talked with our Heather Dinich yesterday, and listen to what he said.
I can't imagine that right now we're all going to open at the same time. I don't see a conference, not just the Big Ten, but any conference, penalizing 80% or 75% of the schools because 25% of them can't open. To me, unless there's a level playing field and the NCAA comes out and says that no one's opening before this date, to try to help with that, what you really end up doing is you end up hurting the conference. Say two or three of the schools in our conference that are ranked in the top 10 have the ability to open, and a couple schools that don't, and you make the decision to hold the entire conference back, you're really hurting the conference as a whole in terms of their ability to compete.
I've got to tell you, Heather, when that was sent to me yesterday, it got a big wow from me. Again, that was part of an individual conversation you had with him yesterday. What is the significance of a high-profile coach at a very high-profile school saying that out loud?
Well, it puts into public conversation a very uncomfortable and potentially unfair, but also very realistic possibility. I mean, if you look at the ACC alone, that conference spans 10 different states. And there's no telling what each of those varying restrictions might look like when these schools can or can't open. So there is a financially dire situation at all of these schools if there is no football. So those that can play will probably try to play, even if it's unfair and some can't.
Yeah, the ACC is 10 states. The Big Ten is 11 states. The SEC is 11 states. So how are the conferences ultimately, assuming it is the individual conferences who will ultimately make these decisions, how will they go about making those calls?
Well, let me be very clear and say that the commissioners we have spoken to ideally want to do this together, but they are leaning on national experts, medical experts, state governors and officials. They have been on a call recently with Vice President Mike Pence and White House scientists and experts to help make these decisions. But at the end of the day, it might be out of their hands and all in the hands of the scientists and state and government officials.
And let me quickly ask you, what about fans in the seats? Because this is obviously so different in college than it is in professional sports, both financially and, I suppose, ethically. What will they do about fans at these games?
Well, they're going to try to play however they can play, but I will tell you this. Let me tell you what Clay Helton at USC told me. He said, the Coliseum without fans would not feel right. When it's safe to come back, we should all be able to come back, not just some of us. So everyone recognizes the fans are a huge part of the game, but they know that they have to put safety first.
All right, Heather, outstanding. Thank you so much for this, and we'll check in with you again soon. Let me get my guys in here this morning. I've got Marcus Spears, and look at Jeff Saturday has joined the Get Up party this morning. It's great to have you. But Biswagu, I'll start with you. Obviously, right there in the heart of SEC country, you're hearing these conversations about, here's James Franklin and the Big Ten saying, hey, if some of us can open and some of us can't, then don't penalize the schools that can open. What do you think of that?
Gee, I'm on both sides. Obviously, you think about the ramifications of what the season would be. And how would we asterisk the season with a national champion or a conference champion? But that's stuff that's later down the road. In the immediate, you think about the revenue that we've been talking about that college would proposably lose if they didn't have a season, regardless of if that was 9 of the, 11 schools, for example, or 10 of the 14 in the SEC. And you would say, look, let's create a revenue share for the teams that can play to help and benefit the teams that aren't able to open up and play yet and still keep this conference alive. Because at the end of the day, when we come out of this, these schools that possibly won't have that opportunity to play need to be able to come back in and continue on like a regular season for their other sports in order to bring themselves in the football season. So it's, for me, it's very simple. If you have teams that can play, and I'm talking majority, you don't open a conference if only 2 or 3 teams can play. But if you have, for example, 10 of 14 schools that can play and 4 can't, I think they should, and they should help those 4 schools that can't play in order to continue the conference success going forward.
Yeah, there is both the financial piece of this and then the personal piece. And Jeff, I'll come to you on that because you have a son who is playing Division I college football right now. So as a parent, I would just ask you if for example, they say, and we're bringing the football team back,
but the regular students, if you will, are not coming back yet. How would you feel about that?
Yeah, it's a tough question, Greeny. And the truth is, my wife and I have had that discussion. And when we talked about it, we understand the risk that could be involved. But I think ultimately, I would prefer it without other students, right? Keep the circle as small as possible, as for as long as possible. And then as we see how health and safety is progressing, then potentially allowing something else to change.
Fascinating. And obviously, we'll work a little bit on Jeff's audio there, but it is a really important piece of this. What do you think of that, Marcus? The idea? Yeah, that's a different perspective on it than we've heard so far. Go ahead.
Absolutely. And when you think about that, and I'm glad you asked Jeff that question. Listen, football players are not normal. Athletes are not normal when it comes to college. There's a delineation between athletes and students. And it's in every possible culture of college. If you go on a college campus and walk a day with a student that just goes to class and that's getting a degree, and walk with an athlete that's got football practice, basketball practice, but whatever, it's a totally different culture when you play in sports. So yes, they will separate that, and they will bring football players back, and football in particular, because it funds a lot of things that doesn't have anything to do with football. So yes, it's a tough question, and yes, you worry about the safety of the football players and the athletes and the staff around that, but at the end of the day, if they have to treat them different, they are going to, because they already do.
That's a really important point. To me, of all the things we have going on right now, this is the most interesting because it has the most permutations. We will have Will Muschamp, a Division I college football coach, live in this hour. He'll be live in about a half hour from now. He's one of Marcus's old coaches, so we will talk to him as we continue. Meanwhile, we're just getting started on Get Up. This is going to be a very busy day. Coming up tonight, we find out when Tom Brady and Drew Brees will face off for the first time as divisional opponents. Is that the matchup our experts want to see most this season? We'll find out. But first, little sneaky Hembo time, and this one is for Swagoo, who fancies himself an NBA expert. Which active NBA player who was listed at 6 foot or shorter has scored the most career points? It's sneaky from Hembo, and the answer is next. It's Get Up on ESPN.
Though we're apart these days, we're sharing more. So at Geico, we'd like to say thanks. Thanks for sharing your savage dance moves. Thanks for sharing your DIY haircut fails. Thanks for sharing your inner lip sync star. Now it's our turn to share with the Geico Give Back, a 15% credit on car and motorcycle policies for current and new customers. Because we're committed for the long haul, the 15% credit lasts your full policy term. Visit geico.com/giveback for more info and eligibility.
Foot odor throwing you off your game? Stick to a winning game plan with Odor Eaters, featuring 3 advanced odor and wetness fighters. The lineup provides long-lasting odor control plus more to keep your feet on their game.
Odor Eaters powder provides outstanding moisture control. Clear drying spray is the MVP in preventing athlete's foot, while insoles work continuously to manage wetness while adding a layer of comfort. Pick up today at Walmart, Target, CVS, Dollar General, or other fine retailers.
Odor Eaters. Destroy foot odor with the best in odor defense.
Get Up is brought to you by the makers of non-drowsy children's Claritin. Live Claritin Clear. Oh, you know what? It was on this date in 2002 that Allen Iverson stepped to a podium and talked about practice.
We sitting here, I supposed to be the franchise player, and we're in here talking about practice. Not the game that I go out there and die for. We're talking about practice, man. You see me give everything I got, right? I'm the MVP of this league. And when I lose, this is what I got to go through? We're not even talking about the game when it matters. We're talking about practice, man.
18 years ago today, hard to believe. Meanwhile, Swagoo, we're thinking of shorter NBA stars. And so here's the question from Hembo this morning, and it's a tough one. Which active NBA player listed at 6 foot or shorter has scored the most career points?
Gee, my first mind, I think, went to Isaiah Thomas because I think about him putting numbers up against the Celtics. But I'm going to go with Chris Paul, I think.
It's 6 foot. It's a good guess. The answer, and I would not have guessed he was this short, is Kyle Lowry. Kyle Lowry, I guess, is listed at 6 foot. I didn't see that coming. Isaiah Thomas is third. Kemba Walker is second. I want to lodge a protest. Hembo is making these questions too hard, my man.
Kyle Lowry
is a brutally tough
Hembo,
question.
Come on, man.
Look at Hembo. Get out of here. All right, let's get Diana Russini in here, our NFL insider, and let's run the hurry up. Diana, what is the latest on free agent Jadeveon Clowney?
I feel like we're all in a hurry to figure out where Jadeveon Clowney's going to wind up, but he is not in any hurry. He's sitting back right now. The two teams still in on him, though, are the Seattle Seahawks, the Tennessee Titans. There were some reports out there in the Twitter world that the Raiders were interested, but I'm told Vegas, they want nothing to do with it right now, but we just have to sit and wait for Clowney to make his decision.
And see how much he winds up getting. Meanwhile, of course, these teams could have this virtual offseason going on. What are you hearing from coaches and players about it?
Yeah, I talked to a lot of players yesterday about it to try to get an idea. What are these virtual meetings like? People love them right now. A lot of players right now, a little bored, stuck at home with the families. They say they love being all in. Talking to some coaches about it, they find that these players are more attentive at home because they're comfortable. A lot of players that usually don't talk up, talking a lot more during these meetings, Greeny.
And then there is the reason tonight is a huge one in the NFL. The schedule will be released. The season is set to begin on Thursday, September 10th. And if recent history holds, the Chiefs, we would assume, will be hosting that game that night as the reigning Super Bowl champs. The big offseason move, of course, this year was Tom Brady going to Tampa Bay. Among the things to watch for tonight, he'll face Drew Brees twice this season. The two have combined to win nearly 400 games in their careers. So when will those games be played? And, of course, we'll find out where top pick Joe Burrow will begin his career. Burrow and the Bengals will visit Tua Tagovailoa and Miami at some point this season. So we'll find out all of those things. But, Diana, I'll come back to you here. What should we be looking for as fans when the schedule is released tonight? What is really important to see?
Well, veteran reporter John Clayton was reporting yesterday that the non-conference games could start the schedule. Because you look at it this way, if there are some delays because of the COVID-19 situation here, those non-conference games are easy to dump, right? So you got the NFC playing the AFC out of conference. That way, the ones that matter, those will probably start in October. So that will be really interesting to look forward to. And of course, I think every fan likes to take a look at that schedule and see that travel schedule, see how many games in a row their team has to travel on the road. I know for me, that's something I certainly take a close look at.
Let me get my players in here. Jeff Saturday, when you were a player, what were you looking at tonight when your schedule was released?
Where's my bye week, man? I want to know if it's early or late. the later the better, right? That's what you're looking for. And then you're looking for, when am I the only game in town? You know, can I be? Is it Sunday night, Monday night, Thursday night? Do I have any short turnarounds, a late Sunday game and an early Thursday night game? Those are the most time looking.
How about you, Swagoo? What are you looking for tonight as a player?
Well, I'm with Jeff first that bye week, but also Monday night, man. Playing for the Cowboys, obviously, you were going to get a Monday night game more years than that. And us playing on Monday night, it's just something about it. Like, it was very exciting. And also, practice was much, you could ease yourself going into that week knowing you had an extra day to prepare. And then another one, and it's just sheer playing for the Dallas Cowboys, Thanksgiving. What was our Thanksgiving game and who would we be playing? Because it was always a time I look forward to where I had to get about 40 tickets for people to, my family to come sit in the stands. So that's what my schedule was about. But honestly, G, I didn't give a damn about the schedule, about who we was playing. I mean, you line up 17 weeks and you play the teams that's on the schedule and you try to get a W in the NFL. You more look for the things that were personal to you.
Diana, what's one game you're looking to see where it lands tonight?
Oh, I've got so many that I can't wait to check out, obviously, and hopefully maybe cover. But for me, it's got to be the Super Bowl champs, the Kansas City Chiefs taking on the New England Patriots. We've got the Super Bowl MVP, Patrick Mahomes, who we know historically has always struggled in the first half of the season against New England. The Kansas City Chiefs are the only team that have had problems with the Patriots year in and year out. So for me, that's the game I certainly have my eye on.
All right, obviously a different feel for New England this year, and we'll see just how much of a spotlight the league puts on them. Guys, thank you. We'll continue with much more football as we go, including we'll talk about Aaron Rodgers. You know, he and Jeff Saturday were teammates. Look at Jeff sitting there. How does Jeff think the Packers have treated their legend over the last couple of weeks? He'll tell you as we continue in a moment. Get up on ESPN.
Geico gets you access to licensed agents 24/7, which means that Geico is always there for you. If only everyone was always there for you. Like your mom, when you fill out really, really important paperwork on the first day of a new job.
Name, check. Birthday. Social security, is that a thing? Hey, mom, what is my social security number? Mom? 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 Okay, let's guess. 0017. Oh, Gemini. Hashtag done.
Geico, always there for you with savings and 24/7 access to licensed agents.
We continue on Get Up with our two a day in the month of May as we focus on two big questions in the NFL every morning. And we start here with the Green Bay Packers, who, of course, traded up in the first round to take Utah State quarterback Jordan Love and went through the entire 2020 draft without selecting a wide receiver to help out Aaron Rodgers. It was a year in which a record 36 receivers were drafted in all. And Jeff Saturday, we've not had you on since the draft, and we should add here that you played with Aaron Rodgers towards the end of your career and near the beginning of his. So what is the one word you would describe to use how you felt when the Packers traded up to take Jordan Love?
Shock. Honestly, just sitting at the TV watching it, couldn't believe they did it. You know, you're talking about a guy who has led your organization to all these wins, Super Bowl champion, all those things. You would think you're going to give him some help, right? He and Devontae Adams, give him a second team for a third five really help you. Instead, you take a quarterback up that high. I don't understand the thought process. I understand people trying to prepare for the future of an organization, but at the end of the day, you could have helped Aaron Rodgers in this way and shown him and showed the organization or showed the locker room we're trying to win now by doing this. I don't think by drafting a guy who, unless Aaron Rodgers gets hurt, or you're up by 30 or down by 30, will even touch the field.
Yeah, and obviously we're having some issues there with Jeff's audio. We'll do the best we can to get that thing straightened out there. But Mark is able to pick up what he is saying there. Clearly, this is a situation that people continue to talk about. What are you hearing as you talk to people around the league now? We, of course, reacted to it strongly when it first happened. But Marcus, as you talk to other people, what are you hearing from other people and close to the league?
Gee, obviously, everybody was I wouldn't say the sentiment is shocked. They just thought it would have been a better situation for the Packers to go wide receiver and put Aaron Rodgers in a better position to win, maybe get to the Super Bowl. I mean, this was an NFC Championship caliber team last year. I think the thing that has people perplexed is when you have a quarterback of Aaron Rodgers' stature and when you have a quarterback that has done what Aaron Rodgers has done over the time in his career in Green Bay, no one is ready to see any glimpse of the change that's inevitable in every NFL organization or franchise. And I think that's what this signaled. Look, this is obviously about the fact that they were deficient at receiver, perceivably. And look, I've said it. We talked about it a while back when it happened, is obviously Green Bay, Matt LaFleur, the decision makers felt like they needed to address other situations and positions, obviously one being quarterback. And oh, by the way, Aaron Rodgers is 37 years old. So at some point, you have to start to develop a succession plan. A part of this is the emotion that they drafted a quarterback. The other part is everybody's going crazy about this receiver spot. And I keep contending that this team was in the NFC Championship last year.
Yeah, and which means they were a step away from a championship. We'll see. Diana Rossini rejoins us here. Diana, what did you make of that as you sat there and you watched what happened in Green Bay and all of the reaction? What were your thoughts?
Well, Greeny, let me throw it on a head coach who I talked to yesterday when I was going through some of the schedule conversation we were going to have on the show today. And he made a great point. He said, you know, the game that I am looking forward to seeing this season is actually going to be the Packers and the Bucks. It's a bit of a back to the future feel because you've got Tom Brady, who we saw walk away from an organization that we really thought that perhaps he would never leave because he was so cherished, so successful there. While he's going up against Aaron Rodgers, who perhaps may have to be sitting there in the same position in just a few years and make a decision if he needs to leave an organization that he has said publicly he wants to stay with. So that's one point that I thought was really interesting and, of course, will be fun to watch from that perspective of Aaron Rodgers. But another coach pointed out when this all went down closer to the draft about the type of offense Matt LaFleur is trying to run here, which seems to be very run heavy and very similar to what we see out in San Francisco with Kyle Shanahan. But the difference here in Green Bay, you've got Aaron Rodgers. You don't got Jimmy Garoppolo, where, you know, perhaps we're not too confident giving him the ball. So not too sure if LaFleur is aware that he's got one of the greatest quarterbacks to ever play the game on his offense.
Yeah, he's aware. I'm just not exactly sure he's handling it right, or at least the way most of us think that he should. Let's talk about a different quarterback, a much younger one. Let's talk about Baker Mayfield, whose play clearly regressed in his second season as the Browns stumbled to a disappointing 6-10 finish. Did you hear Joe Thomas, the former Browns great? He was on Golic and Wingo the other day. He said he thinks Baker Mayfield is heading into a make-or-break season. Listen to this.
It's kind of one of those put-up-or-shut-up years for Baker, where they're saying from an organizational standpoint, hey, we've given you the weapons now this offseason. We've improved your offensive line. We've given you a dominant tight end. You still have your two studs at receiver. You have everything you need now, and you have a new coaching staff with a new coaching style and a new scheme. Now it's up to you to prove that you can be the quarterback that we saw in year one.
Swaggoo, is that fair to put this all on Baker right now?
Hell yeah, it's fair, G. Listen, first of all, that's Joe Thomas, by the way, who was a perennial All-Pro and Pro Bowler for Cleveland. So it ain't like Joe sitting on that show like me and saying something that's going to, like, you know, send shockwaves and everybody going to think I'm mad as hell at Baker Mayfield. It has nothing to do with that. It's everything to do with timing. It's everything to do with what is at his disposal now. Look, we lamented about it being Freddie Kitchens, not putting Baker in a great situation. We talked about the offensive line not protecting him so he couldn't fully reach his potential. Everybody went back to the first year of the success that he had as a rookie quarterback. And we talked, I said, listen, this was losing teams he played down the stretch. So it wasn't very good football teams. Now, with the pressure that Baker has on him, with the moves that they made in this offseason, and obviously the expectations in Cleveland. First of all, a lot of y'all had them expectations last year, and I told all of y'all to settle down. And then everybody went crazy when Cleveland didn't have a great year. The two things that I said, you cannot buy championships in the NFL, and it takes time for a group to come together, especially when you have that many personalities and that many players. This is a put up or shut up year, because what else can we point to? Are we going to say Stefanski is the problem? Because then you're just going to continue cycling through coaches. At some point, it's going to come back on the quarterback like it always does. And this is one of those pivotal years for Baker Mayfield to prove that he can be the guy to lead it.
I totally understand what you're saying. But, Diana, let me say four things. And they are Hugh Jackson, Greg Williams, Freddie Kitchens, and Kevin Stefanski. All of those people have been the head coach for Baker Mayfield, who has not yet begun his third year in the NFL. Is it reasonable to put everything on a young quarterback when they just keep shuffling around the pieces around him?
I thought Swaggoo was like the gentle giant on this show. He's got a hard edge on Baker Mayfield today, who has dealt with so much transition. Kevin Stefanski is a first-year head coach dealing with a condensed offseason, a virtual one, a shortened one. We don't even know how training camp is going to go. And we're going to say this is a put-up or shut-up year for Baker Mayfield, who hasn't even been comfortable in an offense yet with the same head coach. He's had so much variety. And look, here's the problem with Baker, right? He's got that attitude. He's got the swag like you, Marcus, where he talks a big game. So what happens sometimes when you talk a big game, you have to back it up. I've noticed Baker's style over the last few months. He has calmed that down because he knows he's got to go out there to play. Last year, the pressure was on the Cleveland Browns. This year, there's no pressure. All Baker's got to do is go out there and manage his game and play well, and he'll be fine.
Diana, this is not about Baker's personality. It has nothing to do with his ability to galvanize a team or not. This is about Baker's play. And if Baker doesn't play well, they not going to holler Kevin Stefanski. They are going to say Baker Mayfield. People are not going to give Baker that pass this year. Maybe harsh. You look at the reasons why with the coaches that Greeny just mentioned, but we all been around this game long enough to know that if Baker Mayfield doesn't play well this year, it's going going to be on Baker Mayfield.
The other thing that will happen, and I have to leave it here, is that after this coming season, they will have to make a decision on whether or not to pick up his fifth-year option. We're seeing that play out with Trubisky now. We'll see what happens there. Guys, we'll come back to this as we go. Meanwhile, a reminder, tonight we have this season's NFL schedule release show. It's 8 Eastern on ESPN and the ESPN app. Trey Wingo will be your host. Shefty and Lewis Riddick and Ryan Clark and Mort will be along. They'll look at team schedules and break down all the biggest matchups. That's tonight on ESPN. Coming up, at this point, nearly everyone knows that Dak Prescott does not have a long-term deal. We will explain how maybe he can use that to his advantage as we continue. You're watching Get Up on ESPN.
It's your home speaking, and I need you to do me a couple of favors. First, could you get that blueberry that rolled under the fridge last week? It's throwing my feng shui off. Second thing, bundle your home and car insurance with GEICO. It's easy, and we could save money. Lastly, I know you were thinking of painting the nursery back to off-white, but I'm actually feeling this baby blue. Didn't think it was my color, but I am pulling it off.
GEICO. For bundling made easy, go to geico.com today.
We are back on Get Up, and I think that of all of the sports that we cover regularly here, in the midst of this pandemic, it is college football that faces the most complicated questions in its attempt to return, and we will try and get some of those answers as we are delighted to bring in the head football coach at South Carolina, Will Muschamp, is with us. And, Coach, thanks so much for doing this. And, you know, I heard you talking on a radio show recently about how the players are going to need some time before they can even start any sort of football training once they return to campus. And it fascinated me. I was hoping you could briefly explain that for our audience that probably hasn't thought about this.
Well, Mike, first of all, thanks for having me on. I do think it's different. I hear everybody talking about, well, it's just like it used to be. People are going to come in August 1st and report for training camp and be ready. And that's not the case. 30% of my team has access to weights right now. So we have guys that don't have the access to the same things. High schools aren't open. Gyms aren't open. Some things are reopening in different spots, but it's not like it used to be. So you've got to take the assumption that, guys haven't done anything, and I think it's going to take at least 8 weeks to get them ready to play.
8 weeks total. So that was going to be my next question. So just for the sake of discussion, if you were to get them on campus before they could start doing their football work, you'll need to do something to get them into the shape to do that. And then 8 weeks total until you think you could play a game?
I think that the whole first month needs to be dedicated to strength and conditioning, and then being able to meet with our guys, and then you can ease into training camp.
Okay, fair enough. And then so then 4 weeks more for the training camp, and then you can start your season. So, you know, earlier this morning we heard from James Franklin at Penn State about the idea of a conference playing when not all schools are able to. Now, the SEC spans across 11 different states. So if some are able to and others aren't, when we get to September, Coach, what should we do?
Well, I'm going to lean to our Commissioner Sankey, and he has said we're going to be unified in what we do at the Southeastern Conference, and that's all I can say from that standpoint. And I think that's what it needs to be. I think, maybe some staffs will be able to come back earlier than some other staffs. But we got to let those things play out. But we're going to be unified as a conference in the Southeastern Conference.
Another thing that came up, there was a regent from the University of Minnesota who suggested the other day that all of these things that are happening now could eventually spark the Power Five conferences from breaking away from the NCAA. It's hardly the first time that's come up. In your view, would something like that in the long run be a good thing or a bad thing for your sport?
Well, again, I'm going to let somebody else make that decision, not named Will Muschamp. So I'm gonna let somebody else make that call.
I get that. I can tell that you don't feel like talking about this, and I get it. You have other things on your mind right now. But I do wonder, when you hear all this sort of conversation, what impact does it have on you? What impact does it have on programs? What impact does it have on players when these are the kinds of questions people are talking about on television when they get up in the morning?
Well, I really don't think it has a whole lot of effect on any of us that are the coaches and the players and the people that are involved. Do I think that there needs to be some sort of football czar over college football? I think that would certainly help. I think it would unify a lot of different things on a lot of different levels. But again, that's not my decision.
And I guess one last thing here before we pull a little surprise on you. What kinds of questions are you hearing from your players? Not necessarily related to this, but related to the pandemic and related to the possibility of return and the possibilities involving the season being delayed and things like that. What concerns are you hearing your players having right now?
Well, Mike, the big thing right now is just the uncertainty. Our guys just keep asking, when, Coach? When can we come back to campus? They're eager to get back on campus, and I'm really proud of how they've handled this whole situation, the online classes, all the different things we've had to do. We just finished exams yesterday, so we're going to start back some position meetings today. But it's just the answer is when. When are we coming back? And when you keep answering, I don't know, it gets frustrating because there's a lot more questions than there are answers right now for our guys.
Yeah, I guess that's the truth for everybody. I know we wanted to bring someone into the conversation that you know well. And to do it, we have a little eye candy for you. So bring Marcus Spears in case anyone is wondering, do Marcus Spears and Will Muschamp know each other? Do we have that tape here, guys? I'd love to show it. Here it is. Look, there's Coach Muschamp getting fired up. And watch Swagoo. Look at this. Show me the chat. Look at this. How about that? Swagoo, he sort of stopped you dead in your tracks right there. That's take me through that moment, Marcus Spears.
Gee, because of that hit right there, I'll never have a heart attack in my life. My heart will beat for the rest of my life. Must have come out. We called that. So funny, quick funny story. And Champ, don't laugh on this one. So I switched over from tight end to defensive end. Will was the DC. I remember him and Nick Saban huddling around me, trying to get me to come out of my hips. That's what we used to say when we wanted a guy to punch and knock people back on the offensive line. You got to come out of your hips. So Muschamp had a lot of practice showing me how to come out of my hips. So I'll never forget, we make a play in that game and we run it off. And Champ get hyped now. This is when we were all like new to this whole thing and we rolling and winning and all of that. And Champ punched me so hard in my chest. And when I got to the sideline, I didn't realize how hard he had hit me. I had to sit down and catch my breath. But at that moment, I could not fall down and act like something bad had happened.
Now, Coach, I need your help here because I've gotten to know Marcus so well over these last 2 years. He's been with me regularly and he's become a very dear friend. How do you keep this fellow under control? Because I have to tell you, I find it impossible. There are no ways that I've been able to come up with about how hard I've tried to sort of keep Marcus in control and in check. What, as his coach, what did you do?
Well, we did. We wanted him to be play out of control. That was part of the deal. But that was a huge day for us in Oxford, Mississippi. We clinched the SEC West that day on to winning the Southeastern Conference and the national championship. Marcus was a great player on a great defense, the best defense in ball that year. And really, that was a huge, huge game for us there.
Was he impossible to deal with? Just to tell the truth, because, I mean, I can see it here. Was he impossible to deal with?
No, Marcus was easy. He was easy to deal with, very bright, very smart, really a gifted guy. He claims he was offered basketball scholarships to some of the blue bloods in college basketball. But I'm not sure about that. I don't know about that. I've seen him play, and I'm not sure about that.
Coach, I appreciate you doing this. Marcus, we all do. Will Muschamp, thank you very much. Stay safe. We look forward to seeing you and your players back as soon as possible. Thanks for doing this, Coach.
Mike, thank you. Spearsy, take care.
All right, Champ. Talk to you soon, bro.
All right, Marcus, stay with me. I need you back in a moment. I want to remind everyone that after Get Up this morning, it's time for First Take. That's followed by SportsCenter, NFL Live at 3:30, Rachel Nichols and The Jump. Then a four-hour SportsCenter block today at 4 o'clock Eastern. The PTI guys will join. All that leading into at 8 o'clock tonight, our NFL schedule release special, where we will cap the day with SportsCenter with Zubin Mehenti and Steve Levy tonight at 11 Eastern. So a very busy day coming your way here on ESPN. All right, let's get Marcus rolling. What does Swagoo say?
G, you know what I say? I say Daniel Jones is a gangster.
He lying, G. Look at me today, G.
I'm already a beast, so we just gonna be beastie. I call you bro.
Yes.
You are my bro. Are you crying, son?
This is not exactly how I meant for this to go.
Take that and smoke it.
All right, Marcus Spears, now that I got you warmed up, let's take you through Swagoo Says, where we'll hear from some people around the world of sports, and you'll tell us what they really meant. Cam Newton is, of course, still not an NFL team. Earlier this week, Stephen A. Smith had some advice.
I think he'd be better off sitting out the year if necessary and then coming back after next season or waiting until somebody gets hurt and then landing someplace else. I think he'd be better off doing that than accepting a backup role anywhere. Cam Newton is not a backup at this point in his career. There's no reason for him to accept such a demotion.
That is what Stephen A. said. What does Swagoo say?
Man, I'm emotional. Cam is my guy, and he should play. Cam already sat out last year. He can't afford to sit out another year. Obviously, he had the injury, but Cam Newton should not sit out of football another year. Gee, you know what that means if Cam Newton sit out another year?
Yeah.
He's 2 years removed from being playing football. No way.
I
wish I would have been on when he said that.
Okay. I have a feeling we can arrange that. Next stop is Dallas, which is your hometown. Yesterday, Stephen Jones talked about the Cowboys' recent addition of quarterback Andy Dalton. Here's what he said.
To have a guy like Andy Dalton come in here, not unlike Philly had with Nick Foles when Carson Wentz went down, to be able to, you know, take control and, you know, win games or win huge games for you if that's what you need, is really important. Certainly, you lay your head on your pillow better at night knowing you have someone like Andy Dalton.
Wow. That's what Stephen Jones said. What does Swag Oo say?
I can sleep better at night, G, knowing that my backup plan can become the plan. I can sleep really good at night when I can decide to pull out an Aston Martin or a Ferrari. It don't matter. It doesn't matter. Like, that's what the Cowboys did. That's the position they put themselves in. So when the backup plan can become the plan, and you know you can almost have the same amount of success, you get a better night's sleep, G.
It really is a remarkable thing for him to say in this circumstance. Meanwhile, one more, and this is the one I'm really looking forward to. Jeff Van Gundy was on Golic and Wingo yesterday talking about the difference between the era in which Michael Jordan played and today. Here's what he said.
I don't think any players from that era would want to be covered in today's media because the phone could take pictures. Everybody's a reporter in that way. And I think it's a much more challenging environment to try to live a life in sports today. But back then, I think they had to deal with more highly critical local media and, I think, columnists.
So that's what Jeff Van Gundy said. What does Swag Oo say?
Very smart by Jeff Van Gundy. Obviously, Gundy does a great job. Basically, what he's saying is that Jordan retired because the media got on him about gambling. And now guys are having to play every day with media talking about how bad they are. So you want local media to go hard on you or national media? You pick. I would love to be highly scrutinized in a smaller section of the country as opposed to being highly scrutinized around the whole world. And that's what players deal with today, G.
Yesterday on this show, Stephen A. said he believes today's players are soft. That is the word that he used. Not all, but many of today's players, comparatively speaking, are soft. What do you think?
No, they're not. They're just, they're, it's an evolution of what this generation is, G. Like, look, you grew up in a time where people and men did things a certain way. I grew up in a time where people and men did things in a certain way, and now this is the next generation of those guys. And look, we can look at individual situations and say guys are soft and they don't deal with things well. The bottom line is this. These guys are playing under more scrutiny and more public attention, national, world attention than any generation ever. So, yes, you are going to get different reactions from them.
Yeah, this is a fascinating conversation that will carry over into our next hour. Very well done, Swag Oo. Meanwhile, coming up, Mike Trout back on the field. LeBron James back on the court. Why there are some hopeful signs that we could see in the weeks ahead. All that and more next. Get up, ESPN.